Despite everything, I want to live hopefully. In order to do that, in order to live with hope, one must have faith. And I want to find my faith right here, right in the middle of everything, right in the mess, because that's where I am. Right in the mess. As much as I also, yes, just want to escape. It makes sense to me that we often put our faith in a God or a spirit who is beyond or above this world, not part of this world. There is a God, a heaven elsewhere. Someday, when we finally leave this world, we'll hopefully get there. Many of us have probably criticized, or some of us even made fun of, some versions of Christianity that seem pie in the sky when you die to us. But we all long for, now and then, escape from the world. We all need a rest now and then, after all. We need places of safety where we can heal when we need to. When I thought about that phrase, when I wrote it down, places of safety, the first thing that came to mind for me, the image, was a hospital. Hospital is a place set apart from our usual world. And the point of that setting apart is to establish a safe place where some special healing might be able to happen that wouldn't be able to happen otherwise. I think also about schools and churches and temples and all houses of worship, all places set apart. We rely on these places as places of safety and refuge, which is why it must continue to be horrifying whenever gun violence or any other kind of violence violates those spaces. We need our spaces set apart, sacred. We need our pulse nightclubs. Setting apart, sacred. That's a way of understanding just prayer and meditation too, and worship. It's all ways of setting us apart from the usual world. When we put a prayer mat down, when we cast a circle, when we sit still and concentrate our awareness on our breath, when we just ring a bell and listen to that, all of that creates a time and space apart, sacred time and sacred space. In the Hebrew Bible, when it talks about something being holy, what it means by that word is something set apart. The Holy of Holies, which is at the center of the temple in Jerusalem, is a place where nobody goes. Well, one person goes, the high priest, and he only goes there once a year. The holy is a place set apart from the world. And yet, the holy is right here, right in the mess, right in the hurt and yearning of the everyday world. There's a fascinating poem that explores this by the poet Christian Wiman, who used to be the editor of Poetry Magazine, and now he's on the faculty of Yale Divinity School. He wrote a poem called Every Riven Thing. To be riven is to be torn apart, and it usually refers to a kind of violent tearing. Ukraine is riven by the war Russia has made upon it. Our country is riven by gun violence and anti-transgender laws and legislation. One can be riven by grief or regret. Come to think of it, it starts to seem to me that there probably isn't anything that isn't riven. In Wyman's poem, the rivenness of life isn't something to try to either accept begrudgingly or escape from. Instead, to be riven, this rivenness seems to manifest a kind of both and rhythm of separation and connection, of withdrawal and return, of agitation and stillness. With this past Friday being Transgender Visibility Day, I'm going to adapt the poem somewhat with regard to gender. The poem goes in this version that I'm going to share with you like this. God goes, belonging to every riven thing she's made sing her being simply by being the thing it is. Stone and tree and sky. Woman who sees and sings and wonders why God goes. Belonging to every riven thing she's made means a storm of peace. Think of the atoms inside the stone. Think of the woman who sits alone trying to will herself into a silence where God goes belonging. To every riven thing she's made, there is exactly one shade shaped exactly to the thing itself. Under the tree, a darker tree. Under the human, the only human to see God goes belonging to every riven thing. She's made the things that bring her near, made the mind that makes her go. A part of what we know, apart from what we know. God goes belonging to every riven thing she's made. In the poem, God isn't simply absent or present, either separate or woven in. God is sort of a rhythm of both. To be riven is to belong to God and for God to belong to you. God is both part of what we know and apart from what we know, both here and beyond. We riven things sing God's being through being what we are, riven things. The world is riven, and somehow God is part of or participates in every riven thing. I find hope in that. Maybe this is just a matter of perspective. We need to feel loss. We need to lament the loss that we feel. We need to grieve. And that stepping apart for a moment is just part of a dance where we, in the next moment, will step in. The Jack Pine feels so significant to Howard Thurman because its response to fire is to release its seed. Thurman wants us to consider that there are things deep within the human spirit that are firmly embedded, dormant, latent, and inactive, just like the seed in the pine cone. Things that remain until our lives are swept by forest fire. In response to some tragedy or agony, Thurman has faith that we might find that we hear a new call to the deepest things in life and respond like the Jack Pine. It is then, he says, in the midst of the ashes that the secret of the cone is exposed. And the sacred secret opening may be simply that one is riven. I wonder if the hope I'm discovering here is very dependent on having a faith in one's self. James Baldwin, in his essay Nothing Personal, believes that having a faith in oneself can be extremely difficult in our society, precisely because of how riven our society is. Where all human connections are distrusted, Baldwin notes, the human being is very quickly lost. A society wherein all human connections are distrusted. That feels like our society, people really dedicated to sowing distrust. Baldwin believes that the rivenness of our society is rooted in a rivenness in our own individual identities. Aside from a few friends that he has, he says he doesn't know very many Americans who actually speak the truth. He says, talking to Americans is usually extremely uphill work. And that is because we are afraid to reveal ourselves, because we trust ourselves so little. Baldwin believes that society encourages us to present a false self to the world, a self that is at odds to a deeper, truer self. Presenting that false self to the world, we are acutely aware of how fragile that self is. Baldwin imagines that there is in us an irreducible gap between the self one invents, the self one takes oneself as being, which is, however, and by definition, a provisional self, and the undiscoverable self, which always has the power to blow the provisional self to bits. We're constantly uneasy with ourselves, afraid about the fragility of those provisional selves. And that erodes our trust and faith in ourselves and our trust and faith in others. And yet, within the riven human being, Baldwin is absolutely confident that there's a spark there. One has to look on oneself, Baldwin says, as the custodian of a quantity and a quality, one's self, which is absolutely unique in the world, because it has never been here before and will never be here again. When we try to hang on to our invented provisional self, we necessarily feel fearful. And the pressure of that anxiety can drive us to discover or invent, in Baldwin's words, the stranger, the barbarian, who is responsible for our confusion and our pain. Once he is driven out and destroyed, then we can be at peace. Those questions will be gone. Of course, those questions never go, Baldwin says. But it has always seemed much easier to murder than to change. Baldwin doesn't pull any punches. It's always been much easier to murder than to change. That drama of inventing a stranger, the scapegoat that bears all our sins and will be just fine if we can just get rid of them, well, that's exactly the dynamic of the Easter story that's coming up this week. Their provisional selves made fearful, an innocent scapegoat is destroyed in their attempt to be at ease. But of course, that ease isn't to be found because that self is no less provisional now than it was before. That ease is not to be found, not at least until we're willing to recognize our provisional selves as provisional and connect instead with what Thurman might call the deeper life. Baldwin has faith that we can do this. One day, he says, perhaps unimaginable generations hence, we will evolve into the knowledge that human beings are more important than real estate, and will permit this knowledge to become the ruling principle of our lives. For I do not for an instant doubt, and I will go to my grave believing that we can build Jerusalem if we will. Baldwin lived hopefully. God goes belonging to every riven thing she's made. That the world is riven may mean giving ourselves to lament, but that is just part of the rhythm of life. Meditating on our relationship with the world, Howard Thurman observes that there is ever a recognition of the necessity of temporary withdrawal from the world and its insistences. This is part of the very rhythm of life. We live by alternations. We who are religious or concerned about people's spirits, perhaps what sets us apart is how we might pay special attention to this rhythm. We withdraw purposefully, and purposefully we return. We breathe in and we breathe out. We laugh and we cry. Living our Jack Pine self, there is fire and there is the seed. contemplating his ancestors, stolen, enslaved, Jim Crowed, Baldwin exclaims, "My God, in that darkness which was the lot of my ancestors and my own state, what a mighty fire burned." Through all that terror and in all that helplessness, a living soul moved and refused to die. What is revealed in life, says Thurman, is one with what transcends life. What is revealed in life is one with what transcends life. That feels to me like a faith for living hopefully in a riven world. It's in that riven rhythm that I'm finding my hope. It isn't a question of simply giving up a worldly provisional self. It's a rhythm of going deep and then coming up for air, taking a break, and then diving back in. It's provisioning, setting out, returning, resting, provisioning again. When I can give myself to that rhythm, even in and perhaps even because of this riven world, I live more hopefully. God goes, belonging to every riven thing she's made sing her being simply by being the thing it is. Stone and tree and sky, woman who sees and sings and wonders why, God goes. Belonging to every riven thing she's made means a storm of peace. Think of the atoms inside the stone. Think of the woman who sits alone trying to will herself into a stillness where God goes belonging. To every riven thing she's made, there is exactly one shade shaped exactly to the thing itself. Under the tree, a darker tree. Under the human, the only human. To see God goes belonging to every riven thing. She's made the things that bring her near, made the mind that makes her go, a part of what we know, apart from what we know. God goes belonging to every riven thing she's made. So it is, and may it be so.